This anthem, which still gives me goosebumps, is of course part of the questionable legacy of the French Revolution back in 1789, but is being evoked this week as the French begin an effort to push back against terrorism and the tensions of racism and immigration in a changing 21st century nation. Overnight, Nasser bin Ali al-Ansi, an official of the Yemeni branch of al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, formally claimed responsibility for last week's Paris attack on the Charlie Hebdo magazine.
As for the blessed Battle of Paris, we in the Organization of Jihad in the Arabian Peninsula claim responsibility for this operation as vengeance for the Messenger of Allah. We clarify to the Ummah that we are the ones who chose the target, laid the plan, financed the operation, and appointed its emir.
In response, the French National Assembly voted 488-1 with 13 abstentions to escalate French military efforts against ISIS, against al-Qaeda, and against all terrorist groups in Syria. Paul Piller is non-resident senior fellow at the Center for Security Studies at Georgetown University. He's also a former CIA National Intelligence Officer. He joins us now. Paul, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Can anything be accomplished by escalating in Syria to respond to an attack in Paris?
I don't think so. Of course, in Syria, as well as neighboring Iraq, the group we're talking about is ISIS. There was an ISIS angle to the events in France in that the perpetrator of the attack at the kosher supermarket claimed to be acting in the name of ISIS. But if there's any kind of organizational tie at all, it appears to have instead been al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula who made the claim that you just referred to.
Can you put pressure on these groups in a battlefield situation, even if you can't get at the message, which seems to have motivated the Kouachi brothers in Paris and this individual who attacked the kosher supermarket in Paris?
Well, there's certainly pressure already being placed by the United States. And as you mentioned, with the National Assembly vote, the French have so far taken a very firm line with regard to their continuing to participate in the military effort in the Middle East. But that really does basically does nothing with regard to the inspiration that such groups or their ideologies may provide for radicals in France or in the United States or anywhere else for that matter, basically doing their own thing. And with regard to the claim statement by AQAP, the al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, I think the investigation would still have to go farther before it's determined whether that's a legitimate claim in the sense of the group having originated or directed the operation, as opposed to being more, again, a matter of inspiration for the brothers who staged the attack at the magazine offices.
No, that's a really good point. You know, I'm recalling, and I'm sure you recall as well, just how critical France was of the U.S. actions in Iraq. Is it possible, ironically, that the French are succumbing to a kind of weakness to take some kind of action in this moment of national crisis, even if it has no impact, and that they're failing to learn their own lessons from the Iraq debacle by taking action here in Syria?
Clearly, there is a great amount of emotion that is driving events, and I would have to say driving policy at the moment in France. Given the outpouring of feeling and the demonstrations of support in the street and so on, with all the foreign leaders marching arm in arm, it would be politically very hazardous for President Hollande or anyone as a political leader in France to, at this moment, appear anything other than firm and forthright and quite militant. I think if there were anything otherwise in French policy, the first thought would be how the far right and the National Front Party would probably profit politically at the next election.
And, of course, there were political profiteers after 9/11 as well, and we're living the legacy of that here in the United States. Paul Piller, let's think a little bit about what's going to happen now. We could see, I mean, given just the relative ease with which these characters carried out this attack, which has had an outsized impact in Paris, asymmetric warfare comes to mind here. Are we going to see increased frequency, do you think, of these kinds of things? You know, marchers in Madrid, marchers in Ankara, Turkey, marchers in Istanbul, other places in the world where freelancers can make great, great impact with small attacks and governments are sort of stuck with the political consequences.
I think the right way to think of it is to be surprised that we haven't seen more of this stuff already. The fact is that our open, liberal Western democracies are very vulnerable to this sort of thing. If we had a similar sort of attack occur this week in the United States, in New York or here in Washington, I would not be surprised. And we have to bear this in mind whenever there are the appeals or recriminations made, and we've heard this in France with the most recent incidents, along the lines of, well, why couldn't the security services have stopped this? And you've read the reports about how the perpetrators of the attacks in Paris had actually come to the attention of authorities. Some of them had already served prison time, so the questions are raised, well, why could they be allowed to do what they do? And the fact is, John, that whether it's in France or in the United States, the perpetrators of these incidents are only a very small fraction of a very large population of people who give the authorities and the security services just as much reason to be suspicious. And these people number in the thousands. We sometimes hear about this when we talk about the terrorist watch lists here in the United States, and it literally goes into the thousands. And the fact is, whether you're the French DST or the British MI6 or the FBI here in the United States, you simply don't have the resources to monitor all of those people. So we are indeed vulnerable.
Paul Piller is non-resident senior fellow at the Center for Security Studies at Georgetown University, former CIA National Intelligence Officer. Paul, thanks so much.
It was my pleasure, John.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.